Yes, good evening, dear listeners. Welcome to a special paid for program by IPC, Independent Patriot for Change. And today in the studio, I'm with Dr. Itura, who is the leader of official opposition party, and he's here and to discuss, speak about the upcoming elections, and also to give him an opportunity to give us what is that he has for us today, and also the platform. Dr. Itura, good evening.
Hello, good evening. I'm not quite sure whether I'm on, is it?
Yeah, it's
okay,
all, it's all
wonderful.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much, Eagle FM. You are always available whenever we wish to speak to the nation, which is quite important because we are accountable to the nation for all we did, especially those of us who have been elected in positions of leading a political party. And in this case, as president of the Independent Patriots for Change, the official opposition in the Republic of Namibia. Although that position is not an institution, it's not in a constitution or any laws in Namibia, it's merely in the standing rules. There isn't anything that indicates in our electoral laws that there is going to be a party which is an official opposition. Nonetheless, that is the convention that we've got in the Republic of Namibia. And as such, I first of all want to thank the IPC members, the sympathizers, and in particular the leadership of IPC. They worked really hard, but I would rather put a lot of emphasis on our GMCs. That is the ground mobilization commandos. These are the people that really built IPC from the grassroots. These are the people that you see, all of them, of course, wearing white, which presents purity and presents honesty and peace. And these are the people that goes village to village, and they have done that since 2022 for going to the villages and also going door to door to various houses in all our various towns and villages and regions. Those are the people that has been the bricks building the IPC. And as president and leader of that party, it is absolutely important that my fellow patriots, the grassroots, feels and need to be appreciated, not only by IPC, but also by the entire Namibian people, for one good reason. Because of their hard work, we eventually, after independence in the Republic of Namibia, have a serious opposition political party that is actually causing the government and the ruling party sleepless nights. But I also wanted this time of elections to thank the entire Namibian people for their conduct during this campaign, especially the political parties that has been campaigning all over the country. We have just recently seen the ugly face of political differences in neighboring countries within Southern Africa and East Africa and also West Africa. And Namibians are blessed and indeed have matured through only 35 years of independence to be able to understand what political campaigns are. They are not there for animosity among citizens. They are not there to create friction. Campaigns are merely there in order for everyone to advance your ideas, your policies, and to be able to convince the voters to vote for you. It's a battle of ideas. It's not a battle of spears and guns and all these other things, or destroying the infrastructure of a country or destroying each other personally. It's about policies. And I think that a lot of the political parties are aware of that. The IPC adhered to that principle vehemently, and we are aware that our leaders adhered to that principle as well. Naturally, we lack a lot of civic education in Namibia. And a lot of Namibians would not have the same understanding in varying areas of our country as everybody has got it. Some of them will come onto your social medias with completely bewildered minds and ugly minds. And what they are taking out is personalized attacks on individuals and individual leaders in the country of all political parties, every one of us has sort of gone through that. And that is something that we need to caution our citizens that that is not the mature, decent way of conducting politics. But what is also important is this, that IPC has become truly the strongest political party in the Republic of Namibia. And it's very evident in the manner in which the ruling party and also some of the other political parties view IPC and what they think IPC has become. It's incredible that within 5 years, we were able, as it were, to plant a bamboo seed in the ground. And for 5 years, we cultivated it without seeing anything. But as soon as these elections came about in last year, you have seen the strength of IPC as it goes around. I want to commend the Namibian people, those that have seen the light, as it were, that this is really the alternative. And for them to accept it, I know that there are a lot of people in the ruling party that don't understand democracy and they do not respect the constitution and the rights of citizens in that constitution as well, that gives us a right to participate in political activities and to ensure that we are able to participate in elections. And elections is a way where you delegate your self-determination to someone else through a political party or directly to direct that to freely chosen representative to be able to go and represent your ideas that may be aligning themselves with that of the political party.
Yes,
and very often our people, when you were to go and ask them, and I would ask the same question today, and that is something that they will need to think about. Why do you vote? Why is it necessary for you as a citizen to go and vote? What is the importance of making those true crossing lines on an appropriate box in the ballot box? That is where you delegate your self-determination to someone else and you give your authority and your power of self-governance to someone else to go and govern on your behalf, to go and implement policies and laws on your behalf to govern ourselves. As long as your rights as a citizen enshrined in the constitution are respected throughout that process. And there are governors and there are also leaders and councillors that get elected. And once they are elected, they neglect their responsibility and no longer become servants of the people. The same goes for central government, where you get ministers that are elected and they fail to deliver. And now the word minister in Latin means servant. So the aim of you is to serve. In the olden days, they used to serve monarchs and to serve kings, etc. They administer the wishes of the king. But it has lost its meaning. And I think it's critically important that our citizens understand that. Now, IPC is the only political party in the Republic of Namibia that is participating in all the 59 local authority council elections. And the members of the public will be voting for the political party. Naturally, some of them will be looking at the candidates that we have sent as our representatives in that contestation. These candidates have got a directive to go and execute the party manifesto, which is our social contract and promise to the people of Namibia in all those localities. Naturally, local authorities are prescribed as to what they will be doing in Local Authority Act, and therefore they cannot deviate from that. But the manner in which they implement the requirements of the Act as prescribed by Parliament will be dependent on how they agree with others. Now, the difficulty is this, that, and I think on one side is healthy for democracy. On the other side, it is not so healthy for democracy. We've got political parties. We've got associations, ratepayers association, contesting for all this local authority. But as I said, IPC is the only political party that has gone toe to toe, head to head with the ruling party for the first time in the history of the Republic of Namibia. That is actually an indication of an incredible growth of the political party to match the ruling party, which is very rare, not only in Southern Africa, but is very rare in Africa in general, simply because most of the opposition political parties do not have the means to be able to match a ruling party. In Namibia, IPC has achieved that in terms of the local authorities. Now, because there are so many, rightly so, contesting the governance of the local authorities, the end result very often is that in order for you to be able to exercise all those powers, if you don't have sufficient representatives, at least 50% of the available seats, then it's a question of communicating with other political parties and making coalitions of governance, and they often don't work together. They have been working in European countries for years, but those are mature political institutions. In Namibia, we are still a toddler. We are still peddling on. We are still learning this foreign concept of democratic governance because we are coming from an African background where we didn't have the democratic governance. We have had our kings, etc. Obviously, our kings and queens, etc., only had the responsibility to make sure that the people have got enough food, to make sure that the people are protected in terms of defense. Those were the initial things. But at this moment, we have got a lot of responsibilities as local authorities and even as government that the public itself is demanding from those people that we are delegating to go and deliver. But it's clear that we have got a problem with civic education. The citizens need to understand that the political party that you elect delegates people who will become councillors. But they become the politicians, they become the decision makers through a process of motions, decisions within the councils, and that is where democracy plays a role. If you don't have sufficient delegated members in there, more than 50%, it means that you have to compromise. Politics is about compromising once you go inside there. You will be able to give and take. You know, but you need to meet a middle ground, very often in the best interest of the population that voted you in there. So, but at the same time, because there is so many entities contesting, one often is faced with a problem where people don't like the candidates that was placed in there for simple reasons that they are either rivals, etc. But one needs to understand that that is not a reason for you to abstain from voting. And that is much more common in regional council elections. We've got 59 local authority councils that we are participating in, and we are hoping that the public will empower this fast-growing, really truly national political party that is represented from the south to the north in every single village and in every single tribe and race in Namibia. We are emerging as the only political party that could really be said representative of Namibians and not a region or a tribal grouping. And I think to build a one Namibia, one nation, the template is IPC. The example is IPC. The manner in which we have managed to actually cultivate a support base all over the whole country. There are certain political parties that has got a support base in one part of the country, that's not really a national political party. And also there's a number of political parties that has got a support base from one tribal. If we really want to unite our people, we need to be looking for something that will be able to cut across tribal differences, to cut across our diversities, and to bring about harmony within the political intercourse of our country as well. So the regional council elections, there are 121 regional councils, and they are distributed in the 14 regions. Most of the regions have got six, sometimes have got seven. Kavango East, for example, have got six. Zambezi has got eight. Kavango West has got eight as well. But places such as Ohangwena has got 12 constituencies. So does Omsati as well. And then you've got 11 in Oshana and 11 in Oshikoto as well. And you find that in Ochodonjupa, which is the largest of the regions, vast indeed, and people travel long distances, you've got eight. And Comas, which is basically just Windhoek around, and the surrounding has got 10. and some of the regions in the south have got 7, etc. But the village councils have got, the smaller regions have got only 7 of them, sparsely populated, and the population, for example, of Karas and Harta put together is equal to the population of Oshikoto alone. And the smallest constituency, of course, it's Okachali, that has got very few voters around there, around 3,500. But when you go to the largest one, which is Rundu, it has got Rundu Urban, it has got about 65,000 voters. So the voting pattern will be different in all these localities. And this is where some candidate that has been fielded by political parties are not popular, and people tend to say, I'm not going to vote for them. You are denying yourself your democratic right, your constitutional right, to determine who should be the one to govern over your affairs in that constituency. And I would encourage our citizens, all of them, even if you don't like that candidate, you could always go and vote for another candidate, even if they belong to another political party. Because what you are looking for is somebody that is coming from a political party that has got policies and principles that align with you. Yes, people have been completely loyal to their political parties, but this is not the reason why you should say, because I don't like the person, I'm not going to vote. So I'm encouraging all the citizens to go and vote for the simple reason. That is how we honor those who sacrificed for the independence and the democracy that we enjoy in the Republic of Namibia today. And that is very important as a citizen, to be able to hold that one as a sacred duty to go and make that cross, so that we all continue to grow our democracy. The moment the participation starts going down, then we are betraying really all our heroes and heroines that sacrificed their lives for the independence of the Republic of Namibia. For us to have generations look at us, and for us to leave a legacy, we need to make sure that we encourage all the citizens to go and vote. Naturally, as the president of IPC, I would love them to vote for IPC. But that is a decision each and every citizen needs to make. You should not be coerced, not even by a political party leader, but you need to sit down and say, why do I need to go and vote? Who should I go and vote? What am I voting for? Am I voting because someone will say, I've been born in this party, I'll vote this party all the time? That is no mature reasoning at all to say you are voting for a party. What if their policies are wrong? I mean, you really don't want to tell me that you are going to vote for a party that has been associated with corruption, massive corruption that has caused a lot of deaths of people, money that could have been in our hospitals, money that could have been in our schools, money that could have been supporting our elderly and our young people, disabled people, vulnerable families. Are you really going to tell me that you'll continue voting that political party because you were born there, because your father was born there? Even the world changes. Even Windhoek has changed. The weather changed. What is so stubborn within you that cannot make a reasoning, logical reasoning to say, I am now going to vote for something that is going to deliver goods to the community? You know, in the Bible, you've got this word which says, love your neighbor, love yourself. Now, what is the meaning of that? Is it really the person who's got a house next to you or the person sitting next to you? No, it is not. It's actually saying that you must bear in contemplation in your conduct and your pronouncement whether this is going to hurt the next person. Your actions must be responsible so that it does not hurt another person. It's the same if you are driving on the road. If you are driving at speed and you've got passengers, if you lose control of that car, you'll be hurting these passengers, or you'll be hurting other road users as well, whether pedestrians or whether it's just the other traffic as well. And it's the same thing when you go and vote. Vote in a manner that you are responsible to the consequences of that one vote, when they say every vote means that vote is empowering a political party that has got representatives in the local authority or that has got a representative in the regional council that will be delivering the goods that will uplift the people's lives in your community and everyone else around you, the schools and the hospitals. So you need to be looking at that. And that is what is important in terms of the clause which says love your neighbor, love yourself. But at the same time, it's also important to go back to old Confucius statement, which is similar to that, which is in a negative terminology, which says that do not do unto others that you would not want them to do to you. So if you are going to vote for a political party that has been associated for many a year with corruption and looting of the resources of the nation, you will be doing harm to others. And you need to look at an alternative to determine whether the alternative that you wish to go and vote will be able to deliver the goods and then allow the public itself to actually benefit from it, or is it going to be able to propagate the destruction that as we have seen in this. We've got a lot of people that goes to bed and have only one meal a day, one single meal. And we've got people who have got plenty. But is it right for us as leaders, as a government, to be able to be content when our own people in our own country are suffering? Is it right for us to seek to actually occupy so much and have so much wealth? Of course, we are all craving for glory. We are all craving for dominance. We are all craving for wealth, and that's human. But we need to be considerate to make sure that our members, our citizens are looked after. The day that I will be jubilant is when I don't see children in Dongerbos in Ochombide dying of hunger, when I don't see people living in informal settlements all around this country, when I don't see elderly people that are sick of chronic diseases of high blood pressure and diabetes, being able to go to hospital and finding nothing in the hospitals in terms of medicine and being told for their little meagre sort of pension to go and buy their medicine privately. That day when we will be having plenty medicine in our hospitals, appropriately skilled workforce that are educated in institutions of high standards, and also having an ability to have leaders that are really, truly concerned about the well-being of the citizens. That is the day that I'll be jubilant and sit back and say, this is worthwhile, the fight that many died for, that many went to prison and got tortured as a result. So that is the time that we ourselves can sort of tap ourselves in the shoulder and say, we did it. But at the moment, Namibia has failed its citizens under the governance of the ruling party of SWAPO. Unfortunately, there isn't one that will be able to say we did not. The intention was great. 2030 vision was absolutely superb. But so far, it's harmony and a multi-party democracy that is successful in terms of what His Excellency, the late founding president, predicted when he wrote his four words to the Vision 2030, when he said by 2030, Namibia shall be an industrialized nation where there will be harmony amongst the people and a multi-party democracy with a stable peace. The last two, perhaps it was prophetic and it appears to be working. But there is tendencies within the current administration that is likely to destroy all that harmony. And there is also tendency within the governors and the current president, Her Excellency, Madam Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, from the pronouncements that she actually did recently. It's extremely dangerous, and it's indicating that Namibia seems to be sliding away from real accountable democracy, from real scrutiny of the conduct of those in governments. And the pronouncement that she made recently ignores the constitutional principle of separation of power, where we've got three organs, the legislative that makes the laws, and they must make the laws properly. We can't rush laws in parliament in order to satisfy the intentions or the goals of an individual or the executive. It doesn't work in a constitutional democracy. And in a constitutional democracy, Her Excellency was complaining about the delay in making laws in the parliament. But Her Excellency, for the past 30 or so years, was a member of that very parliament. She was conscious of these laws. I believe she read them, and she made no attempts to amend them at that time throughout. Some of these acts that she's looking for to amend is as far back as 1992, the Regional Council Act, for example, that she wishes to attempt. I know that during the term period of His Excellency Hifikepunye Pohamba, when the elected governors were replaced by appointed governors, there was an attempt to ensure that the decentralization is re-centralized by having a governor accountable to the president and the regional councils accountable to that governor. Now, this is exactly what Her Excellency, through her Minister of Urban and Rural Development, is trying to achieve by amending the accountability of the regional councils not to make any decisions or before the governor has green-lighted that, meaning through the president, basically, because these governors are responsible and accountable to the president. Now, these regional councillors are elected and are going to be elected on Wednesday the 26th by the citizens of the republic. They, the sovereign. And I can recall Article 1-2 saying that all power shall vest in the people of Namibia, who shall exercise their sovereignty through democratic institutions. Now, an electoral process is a democratic institution. So the power that is now delegated to a regional councillor, that regional councillor shall be, in terms of the principles of democracy, accountable to those who elected them, and cannot be accountable to an unelected entity, the governor. The governor has been appointed by the president. Of course, with the amendment of the constitution, the president has got the powers to appoint governors. But those appointed governors should be a mere oversight to inform the president what is happening in the regions. They cannot be the people to whom regional councillors should be accountable, because that destroys the whole process of voting. Why should you vote for somebody who shall not be coming back to you to implement what they promise in their social contract to be implementing? So this councillor will not be able to answer. They will be able to say, yes, the governor said we can't do that. So that law that Her Excellency wishes a Minister of Urban and Rural Development to push through parliament is not a law that the IPC, as the official opposition, will be supporting. Because to do so, to support a law that denies the citizens who voted for those councils an ability for them to have oversight on what the councillors are doing through the council's responsiveness in accounting to the public will be very, very unconstitutional. It will be unconstitutional, and it will not pass the constitutional muster, as it were. And we want, and I want, as leader of the official opposition in the Republic of Namibia, cautiously to caution Her Excellency and Her Cabinet that such a law will bring havoc and deny us what we fought for independence. And it will be a betrayal to all of those. There's another law that she was trying to do as well. When she recently appointed herself as Minister of Industries, Mines and Energy. So I was alert to that day after and was able to consciously review the available laws and to make absolutely sure that as a responsible leader, I will not allow the violation of our constitution and our laws. Notwithstanding that, having appointed herself by pronouncements in the newspapers, etc. Of course, in terms of Article 32, sub-Article 8, she did not go and gazette herself as a minister, and therefore not conferring legality on her pronouncements and the writing. But then she later on appointed Honorable Kapofi as the acting minister pursuant to Act 4 of 1990, the assignment of powers. Now, that act itself actually says that, first of all, you have got an act of parliament that said, parliament said, Your Excellency, here is a law that allows you and gives you the power as an authority to assign administrative duties of governance that we pass as laws to ministers. And the Namibian constitution makes certain that those ministers must be appointed from the National Assembly, whether they are elected or whether they are appointed by the president. Those provisions haven't been made so that the president can go and dissect the laws and decide, I'll take this portion of the law to myself. That assigning of powers goes to the minister. There isn't another law which says the minister, by seeking amendment in the National Assembly, can reassign portions of that law to the president. So the petroleum law that they are seeking to amend, albeit that they try to amend it by bringing a motion in instead of an amendment bill, is wrong, because there is no provision in our laws for a minister to say, having received this from the president in terms of the Assignment of Powers Act 4 of 1990, I now have got another act that allows me to chop the law and assign it, reassign it back to the president. The reverse is just not a legal principle. And that is going to take a lot of research and a lot of legal mind to argue. I'm trying to allow Her Excellency to be assisted by the official opposition to govern this republic, but we will not be able to assist her, rather protect our constitution and the laws of the republic for whatever reasons she wants to change the laws. So this caution is directly to Her Excellency to make sure, in the best interest of Namibia, she does not violate her oath of office in Article 30, which she actually raised her hand to say she shall protect, uphold, and defend the constitution and obey and administer the laws of the Republic of Namibia. And the administration of those laws of the Republic of Namibia had been delegated by the Assignment of Powers Act to ministers, as is required by the constitution. To do otherwise will be a violation of her own oath, and that is a serious caution. And I think that Namibian cannot sit back to see something that caused the bloodshed in this country, the sacrifices of the highest price in this country, just being destroyed by an individual for whatever purpose. First of all,
we are with a special paid for program. We are with Dr. Itura in the studio. And just to explain, especially when it's coming to the upcoming regional and local authority election and what he has for our listeners today. Doctor, continue.
Yes, I was just about to say that we cannot allow the violation of the constitution of the republics and also the laws of the republic. Her Excellency stated, and I did not have an opportunity to respond to this as the leader of the official opposition, that parliament is delaying the passing of laws. Parliament is actually empowered to scrutinize these laws before they pass them. The laws don't just come there and then flush out the next day. There are stages. A bill is brought in. There is the first reading, the second reading, the committee stage, the third reading, which she knows very well after 30 years in that chamber. And then it goes to the National Council. They have a look at it. It comes back. If they don't agree, it goes back again. And then it goes to the president. where there is really no agreement or the president doesn't agree with it, then the constitution seeks that the president calls a referendum. You know, so a law that has been passed by parliament cannot just go and die at State House. If the president doesn't agree with it, the president is under a constitutional obligation to sign it. However, should the president use a conscience to say this is not something I could sign, then she's got an ability to ask the public for a referendum, what the public is saying, what the sovereign is saying. But her real problem is that she's feeling parliament is not doing anything. One thing that I've noticed is the leader of the official opposition and who has got a shadow caucus with all our shadow ministers before they go to parliament is that we have asked a lot of questions and she's concerned about that. Questions is a tool of oversight. And in Article 40, sub Article E, the ministers are attending parliament to answer queries. There is nothing else there to answer queries. And also to give the wisdom with which they are administering the policies of government. And that is a requirement within a democratic national assembly. And the members of the opposition, including the official opposition, are doing exactly what the constitution is asking the members to do. Now, in Article 41, ministerial accountability, all the ministers are said to be accountable to the parliament for their own ministries, what they are doing, and in terms of the laws that they are administering. And together with the president, for the work of the cabinet. Now, the president has taken the upstream in the presidency, leaving the midstream and the downstream. Just for the listeners to understand, the upstream is the explorations where you are looking for minerals or oil or anything like that. And once you struck gold, as it were, you then process a number of things there in order to be able to start taking it all out, that your midstream, and then you go into the petrochemical industry where you start now refining the oil in order for them to get your petroleum jelly, Vaseline, and all these other things, and also oil in the cars and diesel, etc., and other things, including medicine as well, that comes from there. So she has taken one portion of the management of the natural resources in her office. Now, when one looks at Article 100 of the Namibian Constitution, it says that all resources belongs to the state, unless it's in private hands. In short, that's what it means. Now, the state, who is the state? The state is the highest governed community in terms of when you go back to the Socrates and Aristotle's, when they used to have a city-state, etc. The state is the whole people of that country. We, the citizens. And we, the citizens, have elected our members of parliament to be our representative, to govern what is ours on our behalf. But we did not elect the president to do that. So it will be completely wrong for the head of state to be the one administering without anyone having an oversight. To whom will she be accountable to? Because she's not a member of parliament. She cannot come to parliament for the official opposition to question who she give APL or who she give any license to explore our natural resources here. Can it be the case as well that we are political opponents? Herself as the president, myself as the leader and president of the official opposition. Should I apply for an EPL? Will Her Excellency grant me that? Or would she be going like, how could I empower my rival or my opponent to get economic strength? That is not going to be possible. What about if her children or her relatives apply for the same thing? A president should never be in a decision-making position in terms of those decisions that empowers people. President should be neutral and should be unbiased and should leave the administration of those to the relevant ministers. Now, if she was not happy because of the rampant corruption within the SWAPO party and the ministries. You know, somebody was saying that, you know, when you become a minister, the first thing is you look after your belly and then you look after the nation thereafter. But if she was unhappy with a minister in that specific ministry, well, there is called reshuffling of the cabinet. Move that minister away and then put a new minister in that is able to manage the responsibility in its entirety of that ministry. Now, if you are managing the upstream, it means that your minister has to come and discuss with you the impact of the upstream management to the midstream that they are administering. Consequently, you've got a division of labor that is not appropriate in that regard. So all of those are severe concerns. And therefore, it's important that ministers account for their ministries as the constitution demands to parliament. And there has been more oversight questions asked by the opposition, demonstrating that this opposition is not going to let things just go down without anybody asking. And it also demonstrates that this opposition, especially that led by the IPC, will not allow a minister to come just fly by night, drop in a motion, and you amend the law. No, it will have to go through proper processes. And what really has driven this is this, that the questions are not obstructions to the functions of the parliament. Should we have a presiding officer that is unbiased and able to understand the wheels, as it were, of parliament? Parliament will move smoothly. We've got a lot of democratic parliaments in the Commonwealth, you know, that has got the sort of Westminster way of governance that they inherited from the British. We all inherited that from the British in Zambia, in Angola, in Tanzania, in South Africa as well. So the questions are what gives Parliament its oxygen to function. And it's critically important that they maintain that as well. Although Her Excellency doesn't like the questions, that's what she was supposed to be doing, except that she's never been in the opposition, and therefore she doesn't understand the value of that. If the questions are not there, what else are this opposition political party going to do? Their job is to hold the government and ministers to account, to scrutinize the bills and motions, in order for them as representative of the people to ensure what comes out there is interrogated, and to interrogate the executive into their conduct as well. It's not free for all. Minister cannot just come and throw things in. So if the president or her cabinet is allergic to questions, then they should go and amend the constitution if they can, in order for the constitution of the Republic of Namibia to empower the parliament no longer to ask questions. But what is really important for people to consider, why there is this jittering and this real apprehension within the SWAPO party, inclusive of those intending to amend the laws that allows for decentralization, what they are really concerned about is the rapid growth of IPC. This party has just grown so much, full of energetic young people, covering every single village. I was pleasantly impressed when I visited the South recently, Chess, Gibeon, Berseba, Betania, smaller villages, Arwap and Coes. But there are IPC members in large numbers. But that was not the case 5 years ago. There was a real turning point where we are occupying a lot of the villages as IPC. That is what is triggering the concern and causing apprehension within the ruling party, that should we, as we anticipate to be gaining quite grounds in this election, should we gain a lot of regional councils, local authority councils, they need and they want a controlling mechanism that will allow power not to go into the hands of IPC, so that they've got an overarching governor there controlling what is going to be done. And that is taking away the sovereign power that is inherent in the people of Namibia. And that is the reason why they have actually done so. So the oil bill itself that they are trying to put through, that we don't want to allow. And also the Regional Council Amendment Bill. Now, one thing that she wants also to push through really quickly is a land bill. How many land conferences have been in Namibia that she more than likely have participated in and more than likely know that a lot of resolutions were passed, probably 130-something, and only a fraction of that had been implemented. What suddenly hastened her thought processes to say, this land bill must be passed quickly? What is it? We've been waiting for 35 years. People have been waiting for 35 years, especially the Ovaherero and the Ovanamas and the Damaras and the Ovakuruhas that lost a lot of land during the colonial period. They have been waiting for them to be given their land. And now suddenly this has to be passed yesterday, as it were. And then the other one is also the investment promotion bill as well that is coming. And I would urge all those responsible in the economic sector to scrutinize this really well, to make sure that we don't pass a law that is going to harm the economic fortunes of Namibia or the people of Namibia. Every one of these bills carries massive implication, not only for the present, but also for ownership, equity, power, and constitutional balance as well. So these laws cannot be just rushed through. Now, if the president wants Parliament to pass laws without reading them unlawfully and laws that may be harming the nation, well, whether she's governing a democracy or whether she's just having a clearance sale in Parliament, she needs to make the decision. We are not a monarch. She cannot come and talk and tell Parliament, do this. Because after all, Parliament is an elected chamber and we've got separation of powers. Her Excellency needs to keep her eye on State House, organizing the etiquettes and the protocol and ensuring that the State House functions optimally, because that's where the head of state sits. But she should keep her hands off from Parliament, because her duty is just to come and give the State of the Nation address, but not to tell Parliament how to do its job or to tell people how to not ask questions. Article 1.3 basically gives us the separation of powers, something which is really milky in this republic, something that the government of the Republic of Namibia did not pay sufficient attention to. And it's clear that if you are a cabinet minister, you should come to Parliament in terms of Article 40E to answer questions. And attending is not the same as participating. Attending is you come there. When you ask a question, you respond. You can bring in a bill and say, Parliament, please, can you pass this? But you cannot vote for that bill yourself because you belong to the other organ. And yet, this has been going on since Namibia's independence. Why did nobody not open their eyes?
Can we just explain that a bit?
Yeah, well, what it is this, that we've got three organs of government. Mm-hmm. We've got the legislator. This is the people that make laws. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the executive. That is the people who execute the laws, putting them in operation. Mm-hmm. Of course, they've got another branch, which is called the fourth branch under them, which is basically responsible for the actual coalface distribution of activities as designed for that law. But then you've got the judiciary that has got the responsibility to interpret not only the constitution, but the laws and anything derived from there. When we are talking about legislation, we start from the constitution, the acts of parliament, then you come to your directives and all the others and rules, etc. It's a body of rules of how we are governed. That whole process of making it is a legislative process. And that has to be done really well to ensure that we are not missing out any things that is likely to harm the nation or to harm the protection of the nation or future generations. Of course, constitutions are amended every now and then. I think in 1992, the Americans just amended their constitution, which they crafted back in 1780s with the James Madisons and the George Washingtons and the Thomas Jeffersons a long time ago. But these have to be amended in order for us to adopt the new needs and the dynamicity of society as well. And the Namibian constitution probably is nearing a time that we need to think about the public looking at it and saying what it is. So what we've got is these separations of these chambers as well. Consider them as three rooms with windows, you know, where you can speak to the people in that window and say, hello, chaps, can you look at this one? But I'm not coming in there to tell you what to do. So it's a complete separate one. And if you are an elected member of parliament, Article 35 of the Namibian Constitution, the cabinet, says that the president shall appoint ministers from that elected chamber. But at the same time, Article 32, sub Article 5C, I think, is also saying that the president can bring in 8 elected. And the reason for that is this, that democracy is not always perfect. When you go and get a political party to get representative to go to parliament, you know, some of the political parties are known to actually use money in order to get their list out. And also the constitution in Schedule 4 actually tells us that the political party should actually organize that list as it feels, free completely at its own discretion. And that is to try and bring in people that really have what it takes to be able to understand the making of the laws. You know, I asked some of my shadow ministers the other day and say, are you lawmakers or are you politicians? And, you know, you ask any one of them in parliament, which one are they? You know, they've got difficulties working out the other one. You know, but the problem is that when they are in there and they are elected and they are appointed in terms of Article 35 into cabinet, then they are no longer having the right to vote in this chamber because they belong to the other chamber, to the other organ now. Consequently, what we have been doing is violating the constitution, allowing cabinet elected members appointed by the president to vote in the legislative chamber, often voting their own bill. And that's a conflict of interest already in that regard. So that has been the biggest problem. So we need to make sure that this is clearly stipulated, to make sure that cabinet ministers come and attend parliament so that they respond as is the law. Now, if Her Excellency doesn't want people to respond to these questions, then she should go in and say, let's amend the constitution so that we can just direct and dictate to the chamber what to do and no longer have a debate, a discussion, an evaluation of the consequences of adopting those laws. So that is actually the choice. The choice is simple. Should we take the journey of some African countries, which ended up in chaos and even eliminated the official opposition? We know that in Zambia, in Article 74, we've got the provision for the official opposition. And in Kenya, in Article 108, we've got the provision of the official opposition. But in Namibia, we don't have an institution called the official opposition in our laws or in our constitution. It's merely in the standing rules of parliament, something which was created by the chamber itself and something that they can alter any time because it's just a question of majority. So we need to decide whether we want to go and see some of the other African countries, some of them our neighbors, where there is no real opposition anymore, or whether we would want to go into a situation where we respect the will of the people of Namibia and stop rigging elections and stop betraying the blood of our people that brought about democratic elections fair and free, and allow the will of the people to speak, as would be, I believe, in the elections in November. Every single year that we had elections, it was rigged. We went to court and we found the mistakes. Last year we had an election that is supposed, according to the law, that was passed on the 14th of August, 2014, that his Honorable Namolo then, who was the Minister of Urban and Rural Development, actually brought it in and said, the election shall be conducted in one day. And that's what he said. And just to come last year, and somebody decides that no, one day doesn't mean 24 hours or that day from 12 midnight back to 12 midnight the next day. No, it means we can go to 1922 and then interpretation of laws, acts, etc., something which was created before a democratic constitution. So we've got a problem that there is technical manipulation of our laws, allowing us to actually completely betray the sacrifices of our people. So we need to choose. Now, I already talked about the fact that we in 35 years became the real opposition in this republic. All the other political parties were quite convenient with this position of opposition. They never grew. IPC came at 20, and we will be able to demonstrate in November, on Wednesday, that we are growing, because I'm convinced from the 5 regional council seats that we now have that they will be increased. Whether they will be increased to 52 or 25 is still a victory of growth to IPC. Being present in 37 of the then 57 local authorities, I'm quite sure we'll be present in every single local authority. And I'm quite sure the majority of those local authorities will now be in the hands of IPC. I know that the public wants a change, and the coal face of delivery of services is the local authorities. And I'm sure that the public, whether they are members of other political parties or not, will be voting for IPC, because that is our experience in the past 5-6 months during the campaigns, that people said we are now tired, really tired for that. So the only reason is this, that IPC completely destroyed this myth of no-go areas. There were political parties that were not allowed to go in areas like Omsati, certain areas you are asked, and there are still people somehow that needs a little bit of engineering who still thinks that this area is not for this political party. And I was shocked that my people in Gibeon were reporting that a senior member of this current administration in cabinet was actually intimidating the people in Gibeon to say that if you vote for another political party, we will not be able to give you grants, etc. That is irresponsible and a low ebb of political thinking that should not be allowed in a democracy. Citizens have got the freedom to choose who their leaders are indeed. Even if the regions that were previously monolithic, we have managed to bring in IPC candidate. Out of the 121 in the regions, 116 are contested by IPC. In the entire Zambezi, the 8 regional councils we are contesting. In the entire Kavango East in the 6, and also Kavango 8 in the 8, and in the entire 12 of Ohangwena and Omsati, we are contesting, including the 10 in Windhoek as well. So that is an opportunity for us to be able to indicate that our party has indeed actually grown. Now, to come back again to Her Excellency's emotional thing, she says that laws are delayed. We say the laws and the bills coming to Parliament lack evidence. You know, we believe in the rule of law, and we can only allow laws.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. We can only allow, the other day, an honorable minister, very experienced, brought a motion to amend a law. The usual thing is you bring an amendment bill, and that amendment bill is intended to amend a law. Now, with that kind of approach, that is not how parliament functions. Yeah? You know, some people will say, Dr. Itila, you've never been in parliament. But I've been a student of life, and I've been a student of politics. I didn't go to prison a long time ago in 1979 not knowing what politics are. I didn't go without studying where the polity, the governed communities in the old, you know, days of Confucius and the days of Socrates and Aristotle, Plato, and all these Augustinus, where it came from. I've got that knowledge. And I don't think that I'll be educated of anything else. Reading rules is not a big problem to me. So I know how things are functioning. But you cannot come in a situation where you put something there and it's not properly crafted. You know, you can't just take a tissue paper and you write what you want to do, and then you call that, you know, this is now how we amend a law. It's dead on arrival, as some of the others would say. So what important is it? If the questions that we are asking in parliament, or our representative are asking, are paralyzing her from not doing anything, and she would have loved to sign one law into operation, as it were. I believe she signed about one or two or something like that. But that is her own judgment that is at question. How did you appoint your ministers? If you appoint ministers not on merit, then you will not be able to have ministers bringing properly worked out bills to parliament so that the people that are in there are actually able to agree with you. We have got a very young parliament now, and those young people have got brains and they've gone to university. You know, even if they don't go to university, they can question, and they are questioning it quite rightly, and it's their prerogative to do so. And the other thing is this, that, you know, a parliament cannot speed read these bills. They have to carefully scrutinize them before they actually come to pass them. Parliament is not going to be the rubber stamp that used to be in the days for the past 30 years because of the inadequacy of opposition at that time as well. It appears that the frustration aired emotionally by Excellency is demonstrating that somehow one of these organs are doing their job properly. And I think the legislative, led by the official opposition, is doing its job properly, not allowing something just to run through. And this is why when Honorable Kapofi came in and wanted to table the motion for amendment, a member of IPC asked him a simple question, relying on Article 32, sub-Article 8, which the Honorable Speaker asked, which rule are you relying on? Whether the Honorable Minister, after being appointed as an acting one, was actually gazetted or not. Gazetting actually confers legal recognition and empowers you to act in that position. Without gazetting, a mere administrative activity took place. But if you are gazetted, which comes from the old Roman rules, which says ignorantia des leges non excusat, which means that ignorance of the law excuses no one, because in the olden days, they used to be put on the wall of the city so that all the citizens can see it. And in our modern time, you gazette it in what they used to call the government newspaper, as it were. That is the way of telling people something has taken place. And Article 32, sub-Article 8 says that all appointments and actions by the president in terms of the law shall, not may, shall be gazetted before you actually go on to operate. Of course, there is a principle in administrative law that says that all actions will be valid unless brought in front of an honorable court, competent court, to be set aside. So the minister could operate without being gazetted until somebody challenges that regard, in that regard as well. So we need to be absolutely sure that our members of parliament understand that we cannot abdicate from our responsibility to guide the honorable ministers from the executive as to what is the appropriate thing to do. Unfortunately, Her Excellency is like a football coach who has been given a team to pick 14 people to go and play against Manchester United. People she had got no clue about. People she hasn't understand whether they've ever managed anyone of the ministry or anything for that matter. People who didn't understand the politics either. Some of them were raw, completely raw, uncooked to politics. And that is her downfall. She created a very weak administration. And I'm not going to be surprised if few people get thrown away and others brought in. There will be a confusion. And some of these ministers are clearly incompetent, and one would probably be considering application of a vote of no competence in these people, a vote of no confidence in these people. The Namibian constitution make provision for that, where parliament can basically say, we are passing a vote of no confidence in this minister, and that means that minister has to be replaced from the cabinet. The president will be forced, and all we need is a simple majority. And the president will be forced to take that minister away. If we say, for example, we pass a vote of no confidence in the honorable minister of health, or the honorable minister of environment, or even the honorable minister of works and transport. If parliament does that, then it means that the president will be forced, as a constitutional matter, to remove that and put somebody else there as a minister as well. So that is critically important that the public also understand that. Now then, what is clearly a big problem that people need to understand is this, that Namibia is at a crossroads. And it's a crossroads that we need to go in with cool heads. I said the other day to Her Excellency, the days of polite politicking is over. We need to really slash the nail on the head to make sure we don't become negligent in our responsibilities to guide Parliament and to guide Her Excellency that what she's doing is inappropriate or unconstitutional. That crossroads is up to the citizens of this Namibia to determine whether it leads to a democratic governance of the republic or whether it's going to lead to a monopoly of a group of people deciding what is to be done. Certainly, we need to have a cool mind in order for us to be able to decide that. The president is not a monarch, and her authoritarian tendencies or dictatorial tendencies to bully parliament in a certain direction for her own conveniency is not going to be acceptable to the official opposition. And I believe a lot of other of the opposition political parties will not accept it. So she cannot ask everybody to come in with blind obedience. Yes, Your Excellency. No, that is not the purposes of a constitutional democracy. A constitutional democracy is where we debate and make sure what is in the goodness of our people is what we are going to be passing as well. She cannot fear the questions either that are being asked there, unless she's got something to hide. If the ministers have got anything to hide, then that's perfectly fine. But she also has got a duty to respond to the questions as well through her ministers. If laws are to be passed, they must be first understood by the members of parliament and understood by the public as well. And if power is to be exercised, it must be shared. We know that Her Excellency asked several political parties to go to State House. I know that that was just some, you know, optics to be seen to be communicating with the opponents. That's not the purpose.
That we're working together.
Yes. No. The purpose is to paralyze the opposition, to dilute their opposition, to think that, oh, she's such a good person, no harm will become the Republic of Namibia if we allow her to go ahead. We have already seen the tendencies of what she's doing, and her attack on parliament is the biggest sign. There's desperation. Desperation to allow her to achieve, but you cannot achieve it on your own. And if democracy in our country is also to grow, it has to be able to be protected from emotional leadership disguised in something called there is an urgency to pass these bills. So we cannot allow that to take place. And it's extremely, extremely important, and I'll come to the end of this one, but it's extremely important that whilst we gain independence for which many people died, they didn't die for a specific political party. They didn't die because they belonged to a specific political party. They died because they were Namibians engaged in a revolutionary liberation movement. All of them, irrespective of which region they came from, irrespective of which tribe they came from. We cannot now then come and claim that victory and segregate it to belong to one political party. I was part of the political prisoners that has been tortured in Namibia. I now am the president of a political party, as is the requirement of Article 17 of our constitution, exercising my democratic right. We cannot victimize people for exercising their democratic right. And I think that the ruling party leaders need to do a bit of civic education to their members so that this tendency of entitlement within the members of the ruling party goes away. So, because with that in, you'll never get servants, leader servants in this republic at all, because they will have this entitlement. And they will say that I need to be entitled to this. And the biggest thing that we also need to know is this. For us to trust Her Excellency's genuine intentions. Her Excellency needs to come clean. She really needs to come clean. Because as long as Namibians can see these bulletproof jackets of 2017 at the SWAPO Party Congress, which was won by those who were victorious during that slate politics, and unfortunately, two of them have departed. May their soul rest in peace. But that does not prevent us from talking of an event that seems to have bred this. One thing that we are certain is Her Excellency came from that slate politics, which everyone in that party knows that internal election was rigged. Why is Her Excellency never going to put herself to a genuine free contestation, even although it's not my party, inside herself? At the moment, the position she occupies is a technicality. She's the president of the party. There isn't any provision in their constitution which says the president of the party shall automatically advance to become the president. If she does not believe in the democracy inside the manner in which she came where she is now, how can the Namibian people trust her with democracy at her hands? At the same time, she told the public in 2022 that she will tell the public about fish rot. To date, Her Excellency, and I will challenge her, Her Excellency has never mentioned fish rot. In fact, if anything, she said, I will only allow investigation of corruption that took place in my time. That is a conflict of interest. What about the corruption that took place when you were seeking the presidency or the vice presidency of that party, when people were paid brown envelopes in order to vote, when you yourself wore a jacket that specially made, as we understand, from fish rot money, whoever procured it? So she needs to come clean. What does she know about fish rot? Did she benefit from it? And how could she appoint ministers in her current cabinet that has appeared on the alleged list of beneficiaries of fish rot, or beneficiaries of SME, or beneficiaries of GIPF, and we've got another scandal, or beneficiaries indirectly or directly of the oil rot or the medicine rot? We've got a serious thing to do as citizens, and to determine, should we really be in the local and regional elections, be voting for these people that has got all these people whose hands are dirty? Or should we be thinking really seriously to say that the time of SWAPO party to govern this republic honestly and democratically is gone? Our people will continue to suffer as long as SWAPO is here. We'll continue to have no water. We'll continue to have no medicine. We'll continue to have poor educational systems that is not able to teach our people useful skills that is required by industry. Today, we've got an unemployment rate. The only people that are in employment at the moment is 546,804. So, and in 2018, there were 725,742. So a slight of 24.7%, a loss of that. And that loss will have an impact on our revenue collections, personal pay as you earn, etc. It will also have an impact quite on a number of things in terms of how much money we have in our kitty to be able to pay for schools. I know she talked about free education. This is a gimmick. This is something that is designed for the young people to be misled and to go and vote for the SWAPO party because of that. Young people need to be able to do their mathematics. We understand 663 million is going to be allocated. But NAST already saying they need more than that. They need 800. And then when you then look at the population of students in 2020, there were about 70,000. If it has grown, might be 80,000. But let's take it. You divide 663 by 70,000 students. you'll end up with each student getting $9,400. Now, that is not going to be adequate for free tuition. On the 21st of April, she said, tuition must fall. And now, subsidizing some. Now, that is the same story and an untruth, I must say, that she told the elderly people last year, that she will be giving them 3,000 money for pension. But now she was telling the people, I'm sure you'll forgive me for not giving you that because I'm giving it to the young people. And that's not what is taking place. So my elderly citizens, if you want to leave a legacy for generations to come, vote wisely. And I will urge you to vote IPC because we are holding this government to account. The moment we as a majority are in the local and regional council, we will truly be holding this government to account and they will have to compromise the implementation of many of the policies. So I think perhaps I've given the public enough.
Yeah.
I want the public. It doesn't matter which political party you are going to vote for. Your vote is your secret. It's your constitutional right. It's an obligation in order of all those who sacrificed. Please go and vote, and preferably vote for the political party that has got genuine leadership, that understands the rule of law, and that has got honesty. But we should not go and vote for looters of our economy. So I will be able to invite questions, but may I thank everybody for working really hard, campaigning, and may I thank the leaders of political parties and their subordinates for conducting a peaceful election, electoral campaign process in Namibia. We will truly be the symbol of democracy in Africa if we maintain this. Whether we maintain it as leaders or whether we maintain it, whether we are in government or not, this must be protected by all of us.
Yes, it's exactly 17 minutes past the hour of 11. We are with Dr. Pandureni Itula in the studio. He's the leader of Official Opposition Party in Namibia, that is IPC. And he's here to speak with you. And it's not always easy to meet the doctor and the lawyer at the same time. Along with enough, but let's see what the citizen have. You can engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401. Ask your questions on policies. Ask your questions on what do you want councillors to do for you. But I also have my question. Maybe what are the three key priorities, particularly that your fielded candidates or the fielded candidates of IPC are going to look at? Either is constituency councillors or either is local authority. Key priorities, three.
One of the most important things that I always say is this, that we are victims of ignorance of our rules and our laws. A lot of local authority councillors that democracy has given us to field them on the party lists of all political parties, many of them have never read the Local Authority Act. The same applies to the regional council. You are being asked to navigate a plane and be a pilot with not knowing anything about aerodynamics or anything like that. You are going to crash. The most important thing is to understand the rules under which you are expected to operate. But important enough is this, that local authority is the coal face, as it were. This is where the citizens meet their needs. And obviously the needs of water, the needs of electricity, the needs of housing, the needs of sanitation, and also the needs of persuasion of a happy life. You know, we've got God-given rights as citizens, a right to liberty that should not be denied anyone, and a right to freedom. You should be able to exercise your rights, your freedom. But those freedom must be exercised within the constitutional limitations, bearing in mind that other people has got freedom and you don't cross that boundary. But pursuit of a happiness as well is an important component to it. But what I want our citizens to achieve, or our councillors to achieve in the local authority, is to try and look at how best to service land quickly to be able to provide plots and housing to our citizens. A right to housing is one of the principles of the state policy principles in our constitution in Article 95. And many of the court cases, I think there was a Shanika court case there, that actually interpreted that as a fundamental right. Because you need to be protected against everything else. And if you don't have a house, decency, a right to dignity is important. Without a house, you've got no dignity. Without sanitation, you've got no dignity. Article 6 says that everyone's life shall be protected. And we say water is life. Without water, there's very little you can do. You cannot achieve that. But this is what the state can provide. But what more important the state should be providing is this, that when I went to Tzes, for example, and Berseba and Betania, many of the people in those communities have got no jobs. And if you don't have jobs, you've got poverty. And if you've got poverty, you've got hunger. And if you've got hunger, you've got crime. And crime is growing and going up. Only today, tourists were almost hijacked between Okahanja and Ochivarongo. So these are all evils of society that has been brought about by policies of government that has not created the jobs. Now, why did we not create jobs? Remember Vision 2030, industrialization. Industries where we can process our raw materials and create commodities are the means of creating jobs for our people. Now, if you don't understand that as a leader of a political party or a leader of a country, then really you should be doing something else. Because without a developed secondary sector, we will not be able to do that. But that is only part of it. What we needed to be able to invest in as a country is the human capital itself, skilled people, educated people that will be able to manage these industries. At the moment, if we take a mine there, yes, we've got a few mining engineers, etc., that qualified, some of them, but the education limits. It doesn't go up to level 5, 6, 7, 8 to be able to empower these people with skills to manage a mine, for example. So we failed in terms of human capital as a country. We also failed in terms of proper institutional governance. Corruption is rampant. It's almost the way of life if you are in the government. And as long as corruption is there, they are not bedfellows with economic growth at all. Our economy is expected to grow by 3.4. That is the expectations. But we haven't got the foundation right, the structural pillars that holds an economy. I'm not talking about the little levers that actually get adjusted every now and then if we have got COVID or something like that. These are the foundational pillars that an economy needs for it to survive a lot of onslaught. So we don't have human capital. The governance of our institutions is actually chasing investors away. When you look at the fiscal policy as well, our tax rate is chasing investors as well. You know, you don't have people. We lost about, as I read, 30,000 employers in the country in the last 5 years, which means we lost about 6,000 every year. Now, those 6,000 amongst them would have been employing quite a lot of people. We know that we lost 250,000 people out of jobs now, and there's 663,000 people unemployed, and then we've got 666,000 people that never worked. Now, when you look at the small fraction of 546,000 people working, it's a mere 29%, call it 30% of the Namibian population. Meaning, out of every 10, 7 are not working. How do they live? So our councillors need to look for provision of housing. Jobs must be provided by government by encouraging those investors, local and external, to come and invest in order for them to create jobs for our people. Because even if the local authority provides water and electricity, in the absence of an earning or jobs for these people in those localities, especially those in their village councils. They will have no means to pay for the services provided. And the local authority buys the water from NAM Power and NAM Water, for example, those two services, and they need to deliver it. So the people need to pay for it, but where do they get the money from? And what is sad is this, that in Beersheba, if you don't pay your water, then your electricity get cut off. If you don't pay your electricity, then your water get cut off. So people are really getting into a sanitation problem here, because you are not going to be hygienic if you don't have water. You know, you have to go and borrow. Your students are not going to be studying if there is no electricity. I know that I studied on candlelight, but this is the basic things. Let our local authority provide the basic things. Now, we need to understand that the local authority councillors are politicians. They are not the implementers of their decisions. So when they pass a resolution to say, we will be placing a bid for the servicing of entire hectares, then that bid has to be administered by the executives in the local authority. How quick they administer it and how quick they appoint somebody and how quick council can approve it is dependent on these people in there. In the majority of cases, those people are archaic. They've been there for a long time. They have mastered corruption. They've mastered what is it in for me. We need to overhaul those people if we want the system to work. Because there's quite a lot of people, as we have seen in recent years, in recent months, recent weeks, days, that the anti-corruption is now arresting them left and right. It's like sweet cake now. Suddenly it's being arrested. But that should not be misleading to us to say that they are doing their job. No. That is an election flavor. That they are trying to say that we are now getting rid of this. So if we don't have a good management of a local authority, it doesn't matter what our councillors are passing as resolutions. What I want our councillors to do is to make those decisions. But the implementation of their decisions from those chambers is with these people. And very often, we as citizens, say, even His Honorable Sangwasa, Ondangwa is dirty, or Windhoek is dirty. But it's not the councillors are not employed to go and clean the streets. They say, Walvis Bay has got potholes. Potholes in Walvis Bay is simply because Walvis Bay is under sea level. And because it's under sea level, seawater seepage with sodium chloride loosens the looting cement, as it were, between the elements of the road. And then when you've got slow moving trucks over that, they just go in and they create those potholes. But for the potholes to be filled, it's not the job of the councillors. It's the job of the employees of the council. The councillors can take the decision and say, let's get a tender for somebody to put it. The material they use often is not specified. And it's up to that company to be able to repair them with a quality material. What I think, for example, in Walvis Bay is this, that we need to start investing in concrete roads with metal marshes inside to make sure that that is held together. That's the only solution to Walvis Bay. Unfortunately, those potholes have been in Walvis Bay for the past 30 years. IPC found them there. It's not something new. We didn't carry potholes into Walvis Bay, as people tend to think that they should believe. So providing services, water, electricity, but for the elderly people, Honorable Sangwasa told Ludrets that wrote off the debt of the councillors and say, don't write it off. You know, seriously, that is a problem to the elderly people. It's a problem to the elderly people, even in Windhoek, in everywhere else. It's a big problem writing off the debts in places like Betanie, Tses, and smaller villages, because the people don't work. Go to Vetvlei there. There are people who don't work. There used to be a slaughterhouse there for animals, and it's no longer there. A tannery was there as well. So the young people that used to work there, something like 200 of them, are no longer working there. And there's nothing that can be done. So I want our councillors as a priority to speed up the passing of zero solutions and to make sure that the management committee keep an eye on the implementation of those, and to get rid of the people that are not working from the management implementing those decisions. So it doesn't matter. We need to be very clear here. It doesn't matter which political party is in in the majority in that council. What is important is whether the management is implementing the decisions of the political party's councillors. Now, if you have got in Windhoek, which has got 15 seats, if you don't get one dominant political party, which we are hoping that IPC will be aiming at least to 7 to 8 seats in there, and I hope that the citizens of Windhoek will be wise enough to give that power in solid to IPC. If we have got 8 seats, then we'll be able to force implementation of what they were lacking. At the moment, we've got only 4 seats out of 15. Democracy plays the game. We cannot implement what we want. And that was the case in the majority of the local authorities. But we are quite sure many of them will be under the hand of IPC. And all our councillors are accountable to the party because they are implementing the party policies as well. And as I said, the local authority act is there, but the implementation is dependent on what policies you are following. So, creation of jobs in all our towns and in the villages as well is important to avoid this sort of the sort of urbanization where more than the, at the moment we are 1.4, 1.5, rural community people population wise and those in towns as well. And young people come here with the hope to get a job. So we need to create an environment where jobs can flourish, where investment can flourish. And we should start talking about reducing the tax regime to allow jobs to be given to our people. Now, paying a free education and graduating so many people is not going to help. We are going to educate people for the dole, as it were, unemployment. And that is not going to help Namibia. One of the days, it appears that I believe that we are sitting on a keg bag that can explode anytime.
Okay.
You know, a keg bag is where you've got, you know, when you've got gunpowder and you've got a little thing burning and then it goes boom.
Mm-hmm.
So, students will qualify. Unemployed people will come at a point where their sufferings is comparable to death. And that is going to be a dangerous thing. We have seen how these things can be sparked. Government needs to be very serious in creating opportunities and environments in which we can employ our people. We can't have a population of out of 1.8 that are eligible for work. Only almost a third, 546,000 that is working. How do you run an economy and a nation like that? You can't grow an economy when you've got almost just a third working.
Yeah. We are going to a very short commercial break, but we are with Dr. Itura. He's the leader of Official Opposition Party in Namibia, IPC, and you can engage him in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401. We are going to a very short commercial break because, Doctor, you've been speaking for almost 2 hours and we did not change your tone. But yeah, let's go to a short commercial break. Then we can come back.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and AM.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi. Dayo loka, opone ushendi fenawa, nokumona oijemo ili nawa, ninge pata fanona, monika ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe, bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali, ile konderewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu matatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Yeah, we are continuing with a special paid for program by IPC. We are with Dr. Itura in the studio. Doctor, you wanted to expand on something?
But well, we've got 25 minutes before the end, official end of campaign.
You know, when you're dealing with lawyers, those
are the things. So, at 12 o'clock, 25 minutes to go, it is illegal in Namibia to campaign. I think it's 48 hours before the day of election. And the problem with these things, day means how many seconds after midday that starts the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would love to say that the voice sounds like Honorable Naha Sangula, right, Honorable Naha Sangula, who says that, how do you give a tender to somebody who knows that he has got no capacity to perform it? And I think that's a message directly to the local authorities and regional authority councillors and those that has got the power to provide those tenders, not to do so, to give a tender to somebody that you know they've got no capacity to actually perform. So it's absolutely important that our councillors, when they go in there, respective of political party, to understand that principle. Nambano kuwepo kunene kushamba patero wando vengi penje, shineno vahungire, vera kandime ingire nambano, roshie eronai, kako mbea ko koradio mbishi arikano kuwepo kunene shinene neno vandu mbabu vaungura odo GMC sa mbabu vaungura okushivisa ko vandu kushavitu no matororero nu mbabu varahero vandu kushavitu torore oshira sho IPC mesha ndanga arikana ko vanane vetu mu marukondo apeke peko marukondo wa matororo kushamweri twamo numweri yanja numwaunguro themba mekambura kushavi omavashimai karira mirongo mbali na hambo mbali akashikukutu Hanjene mamu nyando mutima kushoshira jenu, shatoro makopto mengi, shatoro vihavero, ovingi mumarukondwa peke peke, nandari ya mumana nilohondoro pa peke peke, no okuwepo kunene. Okusha matu chandangishi nene, kwa ando avehe, kako, paro udheu, wandu shivaka kaonja no kwe no mea, shivaka kaonja no kwe no ono utite okuria, pothia matu chandangishi nene kushavi, nambano osha oshiwa na shovana mipia, osha umukwatero mukare we hit retu, Ojinoshi tenga tenga okukatorora. Okukatorora okuyanjo ndengero kuandwa vehe imbambu va ruiro shirwa shongutukiro. Imbambu veria njamo shirwa shokundukutiro. Shinga kono kukatorora okusha nao kono kuyanjo ndengero kuandwa vetwa vehe imbambu varimo shirwa shongutukiro. Okuwepo kunene arikana kushamoka toro shira shenikako. Oshomunane YPC mekonjo kushauka toro shira shwa YPC tukare nuandu mbwa henena. Muma hamero, yodondoro pa, mumana nilondoro pa, tutare kushamatu yeta shike. Nu, oinambi matu konjitho kuyeta, oinambi mtu wa shanga, mumbapira yetu njondo kumene njitu anja kushuwa na kuchavi. Shimwe tutorora, oinambi matu katua mumbi ungire, oombi mbi athana po, nambo kuwepo kune. Eshi nde uya apo, nde uya ndipandule na anao shiwana, amendiku maido shiwana kucha, oma hololo metitatu. Oma hololo ne toka hololo wala ekulele oshima shafiman. Ndishi kucha vahapu katunanana unongo wawana. Nde oku holola. Okuyanje ngondo doe komnu toti kucha. Ta. Ufe mbango ndipangela. Ndala nduyanje kove. Ope uka tulemone e mangwetita dipangele. Unenene no mahololo omo dolopa. No mahololo ne yomo ikanjo. Ndala kesho kwashi wana. Genge ne mokshi kanjo muno mno atulwamo kongu dwei ove ulioshirio. Ndeo mno kumuhole pa mokwi matanguna na ndokuli. Inocha kuchito kaholola. Kaholole nga ongu duinya ilile. Na ye okuliko shioveta teta e mumbwedi wapumbwa pamlandu oveta. Ino kutumba mo umboto tikucha itandika holola shashi nga dingimole. Uno kukaholola ashike shashi oshilongweshi ushatikilo hondei hapu. Ongo efimaneko, lova kwaita wakwe toha ilo aveshovo, valime konjelo mangulukolo shilongweshi, atusheni na tufikame tukaholole. Ondala ale kupandula na vaha pava, kuita valongo notava udifa koshiwana, shieshi kaholole ongudu yo IPC, ongudwei paimeno kulita ikufo mbinga, me dolopa adishe dilimo shilongo. Waike afikama vata lafana nongudwe ita ilele na okuli. de oshima sha ulika kucha ongu dwei oya koka kaisivalo kanona oyo nokuli ongu doyo taikondife pangelo ikatule pe pangelo elo pa uyuki elitalika kala talivatele oshiwana. So that is elke ien se verantwoordelijkheid dat makisak water kis afdeling i behoorni ien ding is belangrijk. I kan alleenlijk en daar die kiesafdeling waar I geregistreerd is, gaan kies. En ik wil graag hè, dat allemaal gaan kies, ongeacht of je die persoon van je eigen politieke partij, wat daar geplaatst is, niet van honi. En dien je niet van die persoon honi, wie ook al gaan winnen daar die kiesafdeling, zal volgens die wetten van die land gaan regeren of althans die behoeftes van die nation, van die natie nakom. Zo, so, alsjeblieft, wat ons allemaal doen, is ons moet gaan kiezen. En dat betekent dat je eindelijk je verantwoordelijkheid als een burger overgekomen is. Iets bijzonders dat ons moet dit doen. En dat maakt niet uit wat er politieke partij is. Niet? Ons moet tenminste 80 van daar die mensen, wat 80% van die mensen wat geregistreerd is, moet allemaal gaan kiezen. Dan zal ons onze democratie opbouwen. Dan zal ons zeker wees, die toekomst van Dierland zal in die handen van ons grondwet wees. En het is als gevolg van ons grondwettelijke rechten dat ons eindelijk moet gaan kiezen. Bye bye, dank je voor elke een wat ingelezen is vandaag. En indien u een vraagje wil vragen, u is bloot opgesteld om daar die vraagje te vragen. Bye, dank je.
Yeah, you know, some of the language you can just say yeah, ne, because you cannot, I cannot complain. Yeah, but let us look at, before, because we have around 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Let us look at,
we can't go past 12.
Yeah. It's good that we are with a lawyer in the studio also. Yeah. Okay. Let us look at where do IPC draw the lines to say in a situation where democracy play itself out, like what you indicated. Then you find yourself in a situation like Windhoek already. Where do you draw the line to say, this is the area we are going to work until here. This is what we don't compromise in cooperation with others. And this is what we do because situation can come out. You are rock head to head. Then you are at a situation where you need another political party to work with you to deliver on the deliverables. Where do you draw the line? And what is a no-go zone for IPC?
I think IPC stands on itself and proud to say that we believe in the rule of law.
Yeah.
A lot of politics is expediency and also compromises. What we encourage our councillors to do when they are in those chambers making decisions is to ask them the question as to what is in the best interest of the people of Namibia. We may have got policies and we may have got our own ideas of how best to achieve the goal that we set ourselves. But when it comes to the best interests of the Republic of Namibia and the people that elected us into that position, in this case, they are electing the political party, our delegated representative will go in an induction process within the IPC and also that is being offered by the government to make sure that there are times in politics that you need to swallow the bitter pill, to compromise. In Esuambo, they say, "Onkulunoa johonde nutwila." So we will probably have to think about the long-term benefits of compromising now. But one thing you don't compromise is your principles. I know that there's a lot of political parties and a lot of individuals that have got certain political ideologies. Our biggest problem with that is that the people don't eat ideologies. They eat real food. They want water and electricity. But we need to make sure that we understand the circumstances of our people. But we will never compromise for something that is likely to hurt the people that voted for the IPC. That is our guidance to our representative. But it doesn't mean that you are, especially when you've got already a law that says that you need to provide that. You cannot go and stick there and say, according to our manifesto, we will not do this. When the people of Namibia decides through the electoral process, they are going to give you proportionalities where you need to compromise. Then that's what you need to do. Unfortunately, as is the case in South Africa, the overwhelming majority of the South African people divided their votes. Now, that is a dangerous situation because coalitions don't last long, especially not in these countries. And what we need to understand, of course, Germany has been governed with coalitions since the 1920s, 30s, etc. But in Namibia, we are still a young democracy, and really compromising is something that we have seen in the city of Windhoek, which was problematic. It was not problematic in Walvis Bay. It was not problematic in Oranjemund or even in Lutrecht. And at times as well, on Thia, on Nipa, on Dangwa, on Gwediva, on Shakati, there was times, especially the last towns, that we could compromise. But in Omthia, because the other party has got four and we had three there, which is the case throughout those towns, they just used their democratic majority and even booted out our councillors, hence their penalties of paying those councillors. So sometimes you get people who are arrogant in their application of principles to the extent that they use political necessities to just go against something. We need to remember, when you are a councillor in there, you are there representing a political party, but you are representing the interest of the citizens of that town, village, or the municipality itself. So there can't be things cast in gold and say, this, I will not go further. In politics, it's a question of compromises, but not so much expediency. We cannot be able to do something just because somebody wants it to be done. It needs to be able to be in the best interest of the people in the locality as well.
It's 47 minutes past the hour of 11, and we are dealing with the law because after 12.
Yes,
after 12, of course. There's no, yes. But there's something which I wanted to ask, especially regarding advising. Like us here on the ground, we ask a question: do leaders advise each other at the top to say, we have Dr. Itura here, now we are in the eighth administration, then maybe you have seen something which need to be done urgently, can you call up Mekuru and advise to say, please do this? Just a question regarding that. Can somebody take an advice regardless of politics to say, at least this need to be done urgently? Just from that line, if you can comment on it.
It needs a real democrat. It needs a real patriot to be able to accept advice. I come from a health profession, trained in the United Kingdom, and I did all my qualifications, all 11 of them in there. Trained. And if I get into an operation where I'm operating on someone's neck, and I reach something that I don't know what to do, I'll pick up the phone and say, hi, Peter, whether he's a professor or not, we call each other on first name. I'm in this operation and I don't know what is the problem here. Could you advise me? Oh, did you try this? Oh, that's fine. Thank you very much. It works. Now, the problem of the degree of politicians being in competition all the time, they don't often communicate to each other. I haven't communicated to many of the political party leaders in this country at all. I think probably all of them. You know, the fact that Her Excellency invited political party leaders to State House, we don't know what the intention was. Was it really to gain any knowledge from us to be able to advance a wisdom as to what is the best place to put any policies in? Or was it just basically window dressing for the public to be told, oh, these people, even they have been invited by the president. Of course, it was behind closed doors. But at the same time, again, one wonders whether we went for a courtesy visit or whether we discuss real policies there to be able to guide her how she wants to govern this country. But the biggest problem is this, that it's indicative from the manner in which she appointed her ministers that she did not consult, unfortunately. If one has consulted and did a good background examination, you'll not be sacking your ministers within the first year, two of them going instantly. That is a weakness that she needs to look after. I'm sorry that I have to do this in public. You know, she's still the head of state, and we need to respect the institutions, democratic institutions, including the head of state. So political party leaders in the parliament themselves have got different ideological sort of backgrounds. Some believe in capitalism, some believe in socialism, some even believe extreme in the communists. But one needs to understand that communism has destroyed a lot of countries, killed a lot of people as well. And so did capitalism as well. So, but we need to understand that our people don't eat ideologies. We need to be able to come to policies and say, is this going to work? Is it going to work now and in the long term as well? And what is critically important is for the political party leaders in this country to think, is there a way we can come together and agree on something? During the electoral process of last year, when we challenged it, all the other political parties were there, but for one or two. And then when it came to actually saying that, okay, we'll go to court. And when we got into court there, none of them even said, here is a $10 to contribute to the court. They said, they all agreed, let's go to court. But IPC stood there alone to defend Namibian democracy and to defend upholding fair and free elections in this country. So if we could not agree on contributing to a court case, for example, it's very difficult. I mean, you've got a political party, for example, DTA or PDM or whatever you want to call it, that comes from the colonial period itself with principles inherent in the foundations of apartheid. It's difficult for me to work with people who believe in segregation, who believe in that, but for the constitution, the manner in which it was formed, a congregation of people that need to agree, and also the manner in which they tried to reform themselves into something else that didn't work. You know, to me, it's still the old DTA of 1977. There is a lot of political parties that has been formed because of misunderstanding within a political party that they have come from. IPC is the only political party that has not been formed because of a misunderstanding. Not at all. I exercise my democratic right as an independent presidential candidate. And the powers that may be decided to expel me from a political party. What am I to do with all the people who followed me? I've had an obligation to go and form a political party that is going to be catering for an alternative to this looting and this vicious cycle of economic mismanagement and administrative mismanagement to create something for the young people of this country that they can truly say it's their own. So they created it. So communication and niceties, it's okay. But actually coming to policy issues to say, let's do it this way. Everyone has got their own manifesto. We are pleased that Her Excellency managed to reduce the number of ministries, but she hasn't reduced the workforce in the ministries. We've got 107,000 civil servants, 36,000 in the armed forces and the men and women in uniform. That stayed the same. So reducing that is a little bit of drop in the ocean. This is what needs to be reformed. The fourth branch of government. That is where most of the government paycheck goes to. When you look at the GDP, your consumer is to do with people that has got money and then your foreign investment. But government spending has not changed. And that's why we are still in the same problem. So there hasn't been any change. I think the government and the Excellency need to look at the fourth branch. What are you going to do about it? That's where the real problem is. It's not changing ministers. Yes, because ministers have got signing powers. That probably is a reason to think about it. But if we truly, I mean, if you look in Angola, the leader of UNITA is a member of the Security Council of Angola. If you look in the United Kingdom, from which we borrowed, in other countries as well that borrowed the governance system, the leader of the official opposition is a member of the Privy Council of that country. And you look in places like, for example, Kenya and Seychelles. So the opposition leaders participate in the governance, and there is also that as well. So as a consequence of that, it's very difficult for us.
One of the comments.
Yeah, so it's important that we discuss important issues. Okay. You know, I tend to live in the future. You know, I don't tend to live in the chastising the past or anything like that. Okay. The past is important for us to understand where we are going in the future. But to try and go in the past every time, you know, the biggest problem with the news media is this, that they have got a lot of money to spend on anything that is negative in IPC. But anything that is positive in IPC, you don't spend. I will not dwell on those things.
Okay.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, what is important in the Republic of Namibia is to how to get things right, getting the right people in the right positions, those that are working for the nation, the moment they take that oath office and say, I shall do this, and to understand that their self-interest ceases to exist. And it's only the interest of the population that matters. So this is why I'm saying I'm encouraging every single citizen to keep our democracy alive. But let me sound a word of caution to the ECN. To Elsie, the chairperson of the commission itself. To Peter Sharma, the chief electoral and referendum, that we can no longer accept mismanagement of an electoral process. Rigging of elections is an administrative coup because it denies the Namibian people their will. Any elections that are rigged, actually, the entire ECN should go to prison because they are the administrators. The other day when we were trying to actually bring in a clause to make sure that the rigging of an election becomes a criminal offense, they objected to it. So we should work towards amending the law to make sure that those that are responsible for the administration of our electoral process should be accountable as well, to the degree that should an election be rigged, should the will of the people in any way be altered, that those responsible administratively should be held accountable as well. So with those words, nation, let's go and vote and to make sure that we deliver councillors that will be able to serve our needs.
Yes, we are operating within the law. They are around 2 minutes, and I think it's your time. It's your time. You still have enough time. If in short you can summarize that, then people may want to know, what is the future looking like post 26 November 2025? The future of the vision of you as a leader, and also the future of governance.
I'm looking to a Namibia which is extremely democratic, where all the citizens have got the right to choose their political party, free of any coercion and intimidation, and to be able to freely exercise their democratic right of electing their leaders, and to ensure that Namibia is governed under the principle of rule of law. That is the Namibia I envisage, a Namibia where the young people have got jobs, where our sick people are being cared for, where our schools are given skills and education that is serving our economic growth as well, where we welcome foreigners in this country in order to contribute with their knowledge and skills to Namibia and Namibia's growth economically. So that is the Namibia we envisage. But we need a strategy in order for us to be able to leave a real legacy that everybody will be proud of.
Yes, thank you for holding that time very well. And due to the operation of the law, we are coming to the end of this conversation. And Dr. Pandureni Bango Itura, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Also, for being with us.
Wonderful.
Right.